You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. First and foremost, man, just want to say I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas and enjoyed that time off with your families and just enjoyed just the whole vibe of Christmas like I did, man. And I enjoyed that much needed break from work because I know we all needed it. And I hope everybody's still enjoying their time with their families. And it's crazy how we are at the end of 2022, y'all. Just a couple days away, man, and we're going to be in 2023. That's crazy when you think about it, because it just feels like we were just celebrating a new year, and now we're heading into another new chapter for each and every one of us, man. So I'm just excited for what 2023 is going to bring. But yeah, man, let's get into our sports talk, man. We got some good stuff to talk about today, man. I want to get heavy into college football right now, man, for this episode. Just because, you know, we have the bowl games going on right now, and we got the college football playoff that's going to be played this Saturday. We got the New Year's Six Bowls, obviously, that are going to be played as well. So just want to take a deep dive into each one of those bowl games, talk more about and more in depth about the college football playoff and ultimately who I think is going to end up playing in that championship game as well. Throw a little bit of NFL in there. Can't forget about what's going on there. So yeah, man, let's kick things off right, man. So looking at the college bowl game, so just gonna give a preview of those New Year's Six bowls and just break down each one of those matchups and give you guys my picks of who I think is going to win each one of these bowl games. So first and foremost, let's start off with the Orange Bowl. We know the Orange Bowl is gonna be played tonight. And it's going to be featuring number 6 Tennessee versus number 7 Clemson. So Clemson actually opens this game as a 5.5-point favorite. Tennessee is going to be without their starting quarterback Hendon Hooker and their star wide receivers Jalin Hyatt, as well as Cedric Tillman, who both opted out for the NFL draft. So Joe Milton will get the start for Tennessee in this one. Clemson, they're going to be without DJ Uiagalelei because he, as we all know, is now in the transfer portal, excuse me. And so the freshman quarterback, Kay Klubnik, he's going to actually get the start for Clemson. And Clemson actually utilized him a few times this year, and they actually needed him to come in when DJ was struggling, especially one of the games I wanted to highlight, which they were on the verge of losing at home against NC State. They needed to have him come in and help save the day. So let's look at Clemson. So Clemson, they're 5th in the ACC in rushing, 3rd in points allowed, 4th in yards allowed, and they're 3rd in sacks. Tennessee, they're 1st in the SEC in yards per game, 1st in passing, 4th in rushing, and 5th in points allowed, and 5th in sacks. So looking at this matchup, man, my pick here, I'm going to go with Tennessee. I think despite without being without their best playmakers, I do think that they're going to find a way to win. I think they'll be more physical and they'll be able to stop Clemson's best player. Well, be able to contain him. So, and I'm talking about Will Shipley. So Will Shipley has really been the savior for Clemson all year. I mean, when their backs were against the wall, they put the ball in Will Shipley's hand, and he seemed to always, majority of the time, come up in the clutch moments when they needed him to make a play. And I think that if Tennessee can find a way to really contain him, limit his explosive plays, they'll be able to win this game. I'm not trusting in their freshman quarterback, Kay Klubnik. I understand, you know, he's come in, he's giving them a spark offensively when they needed it. But I do think that, you know, Josh Heupel and Tennessee will, you know, develop a game plan to really still take those deep shots down the field like they have been with Hendon Hooker. I know it's going to look a lot different, excuse me, without those two playmakers. There's two star wide receivers in Jalin Hyatt and Cedric Tillman. But I think that they'll be able to utilize some of the younger guys and also be able to establish the run game. And I like to highlight, you know, the tempo that Tennessee does play with. I don't think that Clemson will be able to match that in this game. But I do think the game will be a good close game. So I'm not going to sit up here and say that it's going to be a blowout, because I don't believe that. But I do think the game will be competitive. And it's the Orange Bowl featuring two teams that are wearing orange. So it's a lot of orange going on, y'all. So brace yourselves, because it's going to get crazy there. So, but yeah, that's my pick. I'm rocking with Tennessee, and, you know, got to rock with the SEC, especially over the ACC. Next up, man, let's look at the Sugar Bowl. So the Sugar Bowl is coming on this Saturday. That's tomorrow at noon. It's going to feature number 5 Alabama, Roll Tide, versus number 9 Kansas State. Alabama's opening this game is a 6.5-point favorite. Bryce Young and Will Anderson, something that came out, which is most notable, is they decided not to opt out of the Sugar Bowl, and they will be playing in the game. They want to finish what they started at Alabama, according to both of them, that when they were asked about, you know, what, you know, led to you ultimately making your decision to want to come back and, you know, what a lot of people will say is risk injuring yourself, risk, you know, putting yourself on the line to play in a Sugar Bowl game, which most, you know, people, if it's not a playoff game, it's meaningless. You know, it doesn't mean anything. But Bryce Young and Will Anderson really, you know, flipped that narrative there to say that, you know what, this game does mean something to us, because we started something special here. We want to finish that with our brothers. So I definitely think that, you know, obviously, you know, people will critique that and say, look, you're putting yourself at risk to get injured. But, you know, they play this game and they love this game. And I was going to support whatever decision that they decided to make regardless. If they didn't, you know, want to play in the game, if they opted out, I support that. And if they did want to play in the game, support that as well. So, you know, that was huge for them to, you know, come in. And I think that made a big statement with the team. So, you know, they obviously, Alabama didn't have the year that they wanted. But it is a great opportunity to finish strong and, you know, head into next year on a good note, with, you know, having a new team coming in, some new faces and some familiar faces that are returning. But, you know, they want to finish this thing off strong and head into next year, looking towards the future and what this Alabama team can ultimately be. Kansas State, they're coming off of a Big 12 championship win, a huge win over number 3 TCU, which was a thriller, 31-28 in overtime. So they'll obviously come out hyped to play in this one, and they'll be excited to face an Alabama team. And, you know, the key player really for Kansas State, for me, is their running back, Deuce Vaughn. So everybody, you know, calls him Deuce, obviously. He had 26 carries, 131 yards, and a touchdown in the Big 12 championship game. He's clearly the X factor, their biggest playmaker on the team. So they're going to obviously try to find a way to get him the ball out in space, you know, get him. I saw him line him up at wide receiver in the slot position, create opportunities for him to get open downfield. So Alabama's definitely going to have to be sound on defense and find where he is on the field. You know, in Alabama, for them, they're going to have, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs and Jace McClellan at running back. They'll have Brooks, Burton, JoJo Earl, and Isaiah Bond at wide receiver. Obviously, we know that, you know, they had Trayshawn Holden into the transfer portal, and Chris Leary also into the transfer portal. So I do think that this is an opportunity for the younger wide receivers like Kobe Prentice, Kendrick Law, and Shaz Preston to step up. And I think that they'll get some action in this game. And also Tyler Harrell, who was a transfer from Louisville, didn't play at all really this year. We saw him maybe a couple of snaps, but he was injured all year. So I do think that this is an opportunity for him to get some reps in and heading into next year as well. Looking at K-State, they're second in the Big 12 in rushing, first in points allowed, third in yards allowed, and second in sacks. Bama, they're fourth in the SEC in offense, fourth in passing, second in points allowed, second in yards allowed, and second in sacks. I pick for this game, it's clear, it's obvious, rolling with the Tide, Alabama. I think that they'll come out, they'll play angry, they'll play dominant, and they'll show, you know, the flashes of what we, you know, wanted to see from them all year. And I think that they did a really good job of that, how they finished the year off in the Iron Bowl against Auburn. And I expect them to come out with that same type of intensity and really dominate in this one and get the victory over Kansas State. And, you know, Bryce Young and Will Anderson, don't know if they're going to play, you know, the whole game, but definitely excited to see them out there and excited to see the younger guys get some exposure as well. So rolling with the Tide in that game. Next up, man, the Rose Bowl. So the Rose Bowl featuring number 8 Utah versus number 11 Penn State. Utah, they're a 2-point favorite in this game. They're coming off of a huge Pac-12 championship win over USC, which we all know they spoiled USC's playoff hopes. 47-24 blowout win. They were able to contain Caleb Williams, really rattled him. He ended up getting injured. They pretty much, you know, shut him down. They were able to force 2 turnovers in that game. Offensively, they were able to push the ball down the field, create some opportunities, and take advantage of those opportunities when they got into scoring position. And I think that they played a really good game defensively. So, you know, looking at them, they're second in the Pac-12 in rushing. They're first in points allowed, first in yards allowed, and they're first in sacks. Penn State, third in the Big Ten in yards per game, first in sacks. My pick here, not really going to spend a lot of time at all, as you can see, picking Utah. Penn State, they haven't beat anybody ranked in the top 25 at all this year. The only teams that they played in the top 25 dominated them, especially against Ohio State, Michigan, blew them out. Them being at number 11, I've said this before, it's a joke. The only reason why they're number 11 is because teams lost in front of them. It's not because they're a true number 11 team. So when people came out and said that, you know, that was an impressive win on Ohio State's resume, I still find that to be a joke because Penn State, who are they? Who have they beat? Utah's defense, they're going to be the difference in this game. And I think, you know, them being a 2-point favorite in this game, that's kind of disrespectful. I think that they can at least win this game by at least 10 points. So I'm rocking with Utah in that one. And, you know, before I go into the college football playoff preview, I did want to talk about, you know, some of the crazier matches that we already had transpire already in these bowl games. And we had some thrillers go down. The first one, you know, I wanted to highlight was that Kansas and Arkansas game in the Liberty Bowl. Man, that one, Arkansas was able to get the win 55-53 in 3 overtimes. They were actually winning this game 38-13. They were up by 25 points, and Kansas somehow, some way, rallied back to tie the game up, and they took it into overtime. But Arkansas was able to cash in overtime and get a huge stop at the end to win that game. And I definitely wanted to, you know, look at one of the star performers in that game, Kansas's quarterback, Jalen Daniels. He actually went crazy. I mean, he's 37-55, 544 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. And he also had 14 carries for 21 yards and a touchdown. So that was, I think that was huge for, you know, for Kansas State to see what they have in him heading into next year, because he's a junior, so he'll be a senior next year. But, you know, shout out to Arkansas getting the win, the SEC's first win out of these bowl games, currently 1-3. So Arkansas, appreciate y'all for handling business. Y'all gave us a scare, but appreciate y'all for holding down for the SEC, and definitely got to capitalize going forward. Next one, man, was Oregon in North Carolina in the Holiday Bowl. Man, that one came down to the wire. Oregon was able to get a late touchdown and take a lead, and they were able to win that one 28-27. And then last night we had Oklahoma and Florida State in a nice thriller. Florida State ended up holding on to win that game 35-32 after a late field goal and a huge defensive stop at the end of the game when Oklahoma had the ball. So, again, just wanted to highlight those matchups because we've seen some exciting games so far and can't wait to see how the rest of these games turn out. So let's look at the college football playoff right now. So I'm just going to give you guys a quick preview and talk about the X factors and the keys to victory for each one of these teams. I'm not going to give you my pick yet. I'm going to save that for the end of the show. But right now, man, let's get into it. Let's talk Fiesta Bowl right now. So the Fiesta Bowl is going to feature number 3 TCU versus number 2 Michigan. So Michigan, they're a 7.5-point favorite in this one, coming off of a Big Ten championship win against Purdue. The over-under in this game is 58.5 total points for both teams combined. So let's look at the keys to victory for TCU. TCU, they're second in the Big 12 in total yards at 473 per game, third in passing at 273 yards a game, third in rushing at 200 yards a game. Now, the key for them really in this game for me is for them to be balanced on offense. So you have to establish the run with Keandre Miller. He's a 1,000-yard rusher, over 1,000 yards this year. He's fourth in the Big 12. And then you also have to get the ball in your playmaker, Quentin Johnston's hands. So he's the X factor for me if I had to pick one for TCU. Max Duggan is going to have to get the ball in his hand. He's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he creates matchup problems for defenses. He's third in the Big 12 in receiving. So the Max Duggan, Quentin Johnston connection has to be effective in this game. You know, if they want to win, I think that they, if they could get him in those one-on-one matchups, which, you know, like I said, he is a mismatch problem for really any defense, you know, as big as he is. So they're definitely going to have to find a way. Like I said, if you could establish the run with Miller, and then that'll create those opportunities to open up the pass game. But establishing a run is not going to be an easy task against Michigan's defense. That's only allowing, and they're only allowing 13 points a game. So establishing a run and really scoring on them is going to be, it's going to be a tough task. But, you know, obviously this is a playoff game, so the stakes are different. They're higher. The moment is huge. So we'll see who's really, really ready to come to show up and play in the big moment, especially because we saw how Michigan ended last year facing it up against Georgia in the playoffs. And obviously Georgia was just way too good for them. They were outmatched, you know. Clearly Georgia was going to overpower them, but you know, that left a salty taste in their mouth, especially when they finished the year off beating Ohio State and had high expectations. But you know, this year I think the expectations are even higher with them beating Ohio State again and really dominating them on their home field, and then coming in, and now they're looking for, you know, more than just winning the big game. Now it's like, look, we're expected to get to the national championship now. Like, the expectation is to get there and to win it. So, you know, those are my keys to victory for TCU. But like I said, it's not going to be easy against Michigan's tough defense. Looking at keys to victory for Michigan. So Michigan, they're second in the Big Ten in total yards, averaging 453 a game. First in rushing with 243 a game. Third in points allowed. Like I've already mentioned, they're only giving up 13 points a game. Second in yards allowed at 277 yards a game. And second in sacks with 36. So I think the key for them, and which is their bread and butter for Michigan, is to pound the football and allow that to open up the pass. You know, Michigan is not a huge passing team, but they cannot be one-dimensional in this game. I think that they do have to put the ball in the air. Obviously, feed their running back, like I said, Donovan Edwards, who stepped in and has played a huge role for these guys after their starting running back went down, especially in the Big Ten championship game. He had 25 carries, 185 yards, and a touchdown, which I do believe that Donovan Edwards is the X factor for Michigan, with them relying so heavily on their run game. Again, like I said, they cannot get one-dimensional. So the question here is, will Harbaugh trust J.J. McCarthy to throw the ball in this game? You know, looking back, he went 12 of 24 for 263 yards and 3 touchdowns against Ohio State in that big game. And then followed that up in the Big Ten championship game, going 11 for 17 for 161 yards and 3 touchdowns versus Purdue. So looking at it, I do think that, you know, there's opportunity there with TCU's defense giving up 25 points a game and 385 yards a game. I definitely think that there's room for them to allow J.J. McCarthy to be able to throw the ball and see what they have, you know, opportunity-wise down the field. And like I said, TCU's defense, that's the one thing that is their Achilles heel. They definitely give up a lot of yards. They give up a lot of points. So there is a chance for Michigan to take advantage of that. But I do expect this one to be a really good competitive game. Moving on, man, let's talk about the Peach Bowl. Number 4 Ohio State versus number 1 UGA. It's going to be here in Atlanta. Home game for the Georgia Bulldogs. They're opening this game as a 6.5-point favorite coming off of an SEC championship win against LSU. The over-under in this one is 62 points. UGA, they're obviously looking to repeat as back-to-back national champions for the first time since Alabama did it in 2011 and 2012. Shout out to my sophomore and my junior year because I was down in Tuscaloosa when it happened. Now, let's look at the keys to victory for Ohio State. So, Ohio State, they're number one in the Big Ten in yards, averaging 492 a game, first in passing, 294 yards a game, third in rushing at 198 yards a game, and they're third in sacks with 32. So, the keys to victory for Ohio State is to take vertical shots down the field, you know, really challenge Georgia's defense. Tennessee, and I've said this before, they were the only other team that Georgia played that I felt like could really challenge that secondary vertically down the field, but they did not do a good job of that when they went and played them in Athens on the road. You know, the game was ugly. I felt like Josh Heupel got really timid with his play calling, and Georgia really got them off of their game. And I think it really started early on in that game because Tennessee got a huge turnover and drove the ball down the field, but they did not turn that into a touchdown. They were only held to a field goal. And from that point on, it was really, they couldn't really find a rhythm. And I think that they strayed away from what they do best offensively, and that's tempo and challenging teams vertically down the field. And they did not do a very good job against Georgia in that game with that. So with Ohio State, I think, you know, you come in, look at what you have. You have 2,000-yard wide receivers in Marvin Harrison Jr. and Amika Ajukpa, which I believe those two are the X factors in his game. You know, obviously Jackson Smith and Ajaba, he opted out for the NFL draft, but you still got these two guys who can create some matchup problems down the field and can really cash in and have cashed in for Ohio State all year. So they're going to also, you know, not just take vertical shots down the field, because you can't just become one-dimensional against Georgia's defense and become predictable. They're going to have to find a way to establish the run game with Mignon Williams against this tough Georgia front. So it's not an easy task to run the football against this team, so they're going to have to find a way to do that, get Mignon Williams in between the tackles. He's going to have to get some tough yards, some short yard situations. He's going to have to stick his head in there and really, you know, man up and run that ball. Also, you know, interested to see if they find a way to get him in space and see if he can make a man miss or create some extra yards after catch. Get that Georgia team moving, you know, from side to side. Obviously, they have speed, but, you know, when you have defenses like that, when they have so much speed and they have, you know, the guys that are physical up front, maybe there's a way to, you know, create some opportunities for yourself if you could get in space. So that's the game plan for Ohio State. Challenge them vertically down the field. And I think, look, don't stop taking shots either. You know, take your shots and be methodical about it. So that's the keys for Ohio State. Keys to victory for Georgia. Let's look at them. So Georgia, they're number 3 in the SEC in total yards, averaging 491 a game. Number 3 in passing, 284 yards a game. Number 3 in rushing, 207 yards a game. Number 1 in points allowed at 12 a game. And they're number 1 in yards allowed at 292 yards a game. So the recipe for Georgia is very simple. Remain balanced like they have been offensively all year. Utilize their 1-2 punch at running back, Kenny McIntosh and Kendall Milton. Running the ball is one of Georgia's strengths, so I definitely think that Kirby Smart will have them committed to the run and create opportunities for their tight ends that I believe are the X factors in this game. I'm talking about Brock Bowers and Darnell Washington. They create matchup problems for any defenses as big as they are. With Darnell Washington with his size and Brock Bowers obviously with his size and his speed, and his playmaking ability down the field when you put the ball in his in his catch radius. He is a guy that can make some plays. Now, Stetson Bennett has turned the ball over, so they cannot do that. He has, like I said, he's thrown some interceptions that you look at and you're like, that's this. Do you really trust him to really go out there and throw the ball that much? So I think that they're going to run it a lot. I think that, you know, they'll run the ball and probably utilize a lot of play action and get Stetson Bennett out on the move and try to get the ball out of his hand with short, quick throws like they pretty much have been doing all year. And they'll probably, you know, they'll take a shot here and there. But ultimately, I think that their game is going to be to dink and dunk down the field and run the ball. So it's going to be important for Ohio State to, if they can, disrupt that run game up front and really, like I said, make Stetson Bennett have to beat you. You know, that's really what it's going to boil down to. They have to limit their ability to run the ball. Because once Georgia's able to run the ball against you and hit you in the mouth like that, it makes it almost, you know, it's very difficult to stop them. So, and with this being a home game, the crowd is going to be behind them. So, you know, that's going to be something that's going to play into their advantage. So that's the keys to victory for Georgia. So there you have it. I'm not giving y'all my pick yet. Like I said, I'm going to give you guys my pick at the end shortly here. So very quickly, man, I just wanted to touch on what's going on in Las Vegas, with the Raiders and Derek Carr. So Derek Carr has been benched by the Raiders for the final two games of the NFL season. And Carr has decided to step away from the team to avoid being a distraction. So the Raiders are currently 6-9. Jarrett Stidham, he's named the starter for the Raiders for these next 2 weeks. Now, let's look at Derek Carr. So he's completed 60.8% of his passes, which is his second lowest completion percentage of his 9-year career. Carr, he's 24. He has a 24-14 touchdown to interception ratio. Meaning this is his second consecutive season with 14 interceptions. He has a passer rating of 86.3, which is his second worst in his career. And the crazy thing about this is, you know, the entire world thought that the pairing of Davante Adams and Derek Carr, it was going to become a dream come true. This was huge for Las Vegas. It was going to be, you know, magical, man. They were going to do some great things. But instead, it has been a nightmare and a disaster in Las Vegas. Adams, however, he does, you know, have over 1,000 yards receiving and 12 touchdowns this year. But him and Derek Carr have not found a way to click consistently at all this season. You know, they've had their little flashes here and there, but overall, they have not clicked like people thought that and hoped that they would. And you know, we got to realize something, man. You know, Davante Adams coming in, you know, once he was traded to the Raiders, him coming in and saying that, you know, Derek Carr is a Hall of Famer and all this stuff. I'm like, come on, bro, relax. The last time y'all played together was in California. This is not Cal. All right, this is the National Football League. And that was years ago. You know, this is the y'all's connection obviously is not as strong as you thought it was. Because we're looking at it on tape and we're not seeing it. It's non-existent. And looking at it from both sides, especially when you're looking at Davante Adams, you go from having a quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who Davante Adams obviously needs Aaron Rodgers, and I think that Aaron Rodgers needs Davante Adams. I think they both need one another. However, you know, Aaron Rodgers is having some success still with the wide receivers that he has. With Christian Watson, with Romeo Doubs and those guys over there. But, you know, Davante Adams is sitting there in Las Vegas like, dang, like, you can only imagine what's going through his head right now because he's in a situation where you came out and called, you know, Derek Carr a Hall of Famer. You take this risk by being traded to Las Vegas, and now your team is 6-9, you're out of the playoffs, and you could potentially be watching Aaron Rodgers playing in the playoffs if the stars align for them, but they still need a lot to happen there. I'm still not picking Green Bay to go to the playoffs. So, but he could potentially be sitting on his couch watching Aaron Rodgers, his former quarterback, in the playoffs. Like, how crazy would that be? You know what I mean? So, I know I was talking about Derek Carr, but I just had to chime in and just really talk about Davante Adams because it's just something to think about. So what's next for Derek Carr, man? You know, he signed a 3-year, $121.5 million extension in April. That included a no-trade clause, meaning that if the Raiders do want to trade him, he has to actually want to play for that team in order for them to trade him. The Raiders, they can't trade him until the $40 million in injury guarantees flips to fully guaranteed, which I think after these final two games, then that it'll be that fully guaranteed, $40 million fully guaranteed in injuries. And if he is cut or traded within 3 days of the Super Bowl, the Raiders will only have to take a dead cap hit of $5.62 million. So, but, man, Derek Carr, you know, just looking at him, realistically, man, him getting cut or traded, obviously there's some teams that are looking for quarterbacks. You got the Jets. They don't know what they're having there. Obviously, Zach Wilson is a bust there. And, you know, they don't – obviously looking at Mike White, who knows what's there. Miami, they don't know what's going to happen with Tua. Obviously, with his concussion issues this year, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. And you got Houston. There's other teams that are looking for quarterbacks. But, you know, other than that, man, I think ultimately Derek Carr – he should prepare himself to be that certified backup quarterback, man. I'm sorry, man. Derek Carr, the writing is on the wall, bro. Like, I really don't know what else to say. It's like you have Davante Adams, one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, and you can't do anything with it. You have Josh Jacobs, a solid running game. You have a Darren Waller at tight end. Like, you have pieces around you, and you're still not able to get the job done. So, for me, what's next for Derek Carr? For me, start mentally preparing yourself to be a backup quarterback, bro. I look, he's probably going to get a chance to start somewhere else because people are desperate in need of a quarterback. But ultimately, I think that he'll finish his career as being that backup guy, like Joe Flacco, a backup quarterback. Like, that's really it, you know. So it is what it is. So let's move on, man, and let's finally talk about who I think is going to advance in the national championship game. So, you know, for me, just looking at the Fiesta Bowl, the first matchup that we discussed, I'm going to go with Michigan in this game to win this game against TCU and advance to the national championship game. I just think that, you know, obviously, like I said before, I think that TCU creates matchup problems with Quentin Johnston. But ultimately, I think that their defense gives up so much. I think that Michigan is going to be able to run the football. I think that's going to create some opportunities for them to take shots downfield. And I think that they'll be effective and take advantage of their opportunities when they get in scoring position. Now, like I said before, Max Duggan and those in TCU, they've been, you know, they've been battle tested and have fought back in games all year, but I think that luck, you know, is going to run out. And I think that, like I said, Michigan is going to advance to the national championship game. Looking at the Peach Bowl. So, here, I really debated this one, in looking at it. But I'm going to lean and go with Georgia, in this game, to advance to the national championship game. Reason being is, man, I just, from a physicality standpoint, I just don't know, you know, I just don't know how much I would trust Ohio State in this game. In a tough road game here in Atlanta, in the Mercedes-Benz Dome, with thousands of Georgia fans screaming and going crazy, like, I just don't know, you know. I don't know if C.J. Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr. are going to be able to find that connection, and what's going to happen if Georgia is able to take that away. You know, I do think that, you know, Ohio State, they got punched in the mouth at the end of the year, and that's the last taste that they have. And, you know, looking at it and coming into this game, they're obviously not going to be playing. They're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder, but I just don't know if I could trust Ryan Day and Ohio State to go out and essentially on, like I said, on a road game, and beat this Georgia team. I don't know. I'm not saying that they cannot challenge them, because I do believe that C.J. Stroud and those guys will challenge Georgia down the field vertically, but can they do it for four quarters is the biggest question for me, and I don't know if they can. So I'm going to go with Georgia in this one. I'm going to go, you know, number one versus number two in the national championship game. Obviously, they will be a repeat of their matchup that they had in the playoffs last year. So Michigan versus Georgia in the national championship game. And, you know, like I said, that's my pick. But people, don't be surprised if these games are good and if they come down to the wire. Because like I said, this is the playoffs and, you know, things could get crazy in the playoffs. You never know. But, hey, that was all I had for y'all, man. I appreciate y'all giving me your time again, jumping in with me. Just want to end the show saying, man, I pray that everybody has a great new end of this year, heading into the new year. Pray for nothing but peace, blessings, more opportunities, and all of that, man, for you and yours. And look, just really take this time, these last couple of days, to reflect and think about, you know, what it is that you want to do and improve on, and what you want to strive towards for 2023, man. So peace, love, blessings. I'm out. I'll see y'all in the new year, everybody. Happy New Year. Peace.